Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue.
And I'm Ian Pickus.
The daily stresses of doing a morning radio show are nothing new to us here at WAMC. There are interviews to tape and edit, guests to track down, breaking news to cover.
But part of what makes it exciting is the chance to come to the studio day after day and put something new on the air.
But for the past year and a half, radio legend Robin Quivers of The Howard Stern Show has been stuck at home, taking up her customary position as Stern's partner and newscaster remotely as she battled uterine cancer.
For Stern and his fans alike, it's impossible to imagine the satellite radio show without her. And the good news is, Quivers returned to the studio earlier this month after four rounds of radiation and chemotherapy, back across the studio from her partner of more than three decades.
Quivers says she's now cancer-free and she owes her recovery in part to a healthy lifestyle that includes a plant-based diet. She's the author of The Veggiecation of Robin, How Real Food Saved My Life, which is published by Avery.
Robin Quivers, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the Roundtable. Hey now.
Hey now. Yes.
Thank you. And Baba Booey to you all.
Yes, Baba Booey right back to you. My God, you know, we were worried sick about you. You know that, right?
I discovered since coming clean about everything that there were a lot of people worried and a silent vigil going on. And I have to say, I am really grateful that people gave me the space I needed to get better.
I, for one, am just shocked that you were able to have that space. We live in a culture where nothing goes unnoticed, and yet you really were given that space. There wasn't a photo of you. There wasn't any chatter about what was going on. People really were in the dark and got all of their information as to what was happening from the show.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing because I would have imagined that, you know, something would have happened in that 17-month period. But once again, that amazing audience of ours just, you know, put their arms around me and agreed to go with it and handle it in the way I wanted it handled.
As far as the way you wanted it handled, given that the show is so much about openness, given that the show is so much about sharing every facet of your being, at what point did you know that this was something you were not willing to share at that very moment?
I think it was day two. You know, I had come back from this weekend, and I came home with a Foley catheter in place because I couldn't urinate. And I talked about it that first day on the air because I really still was in denial that this was anything serious. And so I talked about it and said, yeah, I got to go see a doctor today because I've got this Foley catheter in, blah, 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 blah. And like it was no big deal. And then right after that, everything started to sink in that this is a big deal. This is a real problem. And at that point, it was like, well, we are not really getting any definitive information. I really don't have anything to say because I'm still, you know, being tested and sent to doctors. And so rather than get on the air and say, I have to go to another doctor and they're, you know, whatever, I just thought, you know what, this is not anything to do, you know, a day-by-day analysis of right now.
But for fans of the show, we've noticed that you were able to separate the comedy of the show and that being as it is with the real-life drama that's sometimes going on the show. You and Howard have both had breakups that you spoke about at a very specific time, and recently Artie Lang, who was going through his own troubles, you guys were able to separate that from what got discussed on the show. And I wonder, how can you be funny while you're going through this health crisis or when things like that in your life are going on?
Well, that's one of the greatest things about the show. I remember once doing an interview with Barbara Walters, and I said, that's not really me on the air. Mm. And the guys made a big deal about it and said, oh, she has this character, blah, 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 blah. And I don't know if that was the best way to describe it, but it's not me who's doing whatever I'm doing on the air. The person on the air is the person who things are not happening for in a bad way. She's just, you know, that person is always ready to have a good time and have a laugh.
One of the amazing things about the story, and to me there are many amazing things about the story, but first and foremost, well, besides the fact that you're cancer-free now and have come through this, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but you missed just a handful of days. What, 2 or 3 days that you actually missed on the air?
Yeah, I think it was actually 3.5. And that only reason for that is they wouldn't let me out of the hospital after that last operation on the Monday or on the Sunday when I wanted to go home.
Yeah, that's probably good. That's probably for the best, Robin, don't you think?
No. You know, I hadn't missed a day of work in a very long time. And I was really proud of that record. And so when this came up, I was like, oh, geez, you know, all of that, you know, never missing a day, never having to take a sick day is all up in the air now. It's all up to question because I have no idea when I'll be back.
You never took a sick day, and yet you write in this book that you went through a massive health overhaul because you were concerned about your health. This in large part came after 9/11, where you were concerned that you would not be able to care for yourself in just trying to escape a building.
Yeah, yeah. Well, prior to really getting myself together, I missed a lot of days. You know, I always lost my voice at least twice a year. Every cold and flu I was, a victim of. And so I was always having to take time off the air 3 and 4 days at a time until I regained my voice and all of that stuff.
Right.
And it finally got to the point where, you know, like my whole body ached. I had pains everywhere. I couldn't heal well from even minor scrapes. And the length of the cold or the flu was getting longer and longer. And at a certain point, I was basically going to work and sleeping. And when 9/11 occurred, I really did a self-assessment. Who would I have been in that building? I would have been someone who needed help, someone who couldn't save their own lives or get down several flights of stairs or whatever it might have taken, because I was in such bad shape. And, in that process, I realized, yeah, and you're not really even enjoying your life. So something's got to change. And then I went on this journey of discovery.
This journey of discovery you call in the book the Veducation of Robin. And
yeah,
there are phases to this. And one of them, of course, is just accepting that you want to change things. There is a great line in the book that you say, ultimately, it wasn't just about becoming a vegetarian. Your quote in the book is that you became a vegan through torture.
Yes. Well, you know, sometimes education is very difficult. You know, it's not always easy. And I met this woman who runs a clinic out in California called Global Cardio Care. And, you know, part of her whole philosophy is that, you know, these diseases of the family are not diseases of the family. They're diseases of the same lifestyle. And, you know, she's done a great deal of research, and she started this clinic as a result of it. And she discovered this machine that repumps people's blood, gives their heart a rest, but it helps to create collateral circulation where there are blockages and you know, just helps to reoxygenate the body and cure people of illnesses and diseases. And so, you know, she was giving me a demonstration because I had asked for it. And then when she got me in the machine, she decided to try to fill me with as much knowledge as she could while I was in the machine. It was supposed to be an hour-long session, but I noticed she kept dialing back the timer. And that's when I thought, what in the world do I have to do to get out of this machine? She's never going to let this end. And then finally I thought, maybe I have to say I want to become a vegetarian. So I just tried it. And I said, okay, I guess I have to become a vegetarian. And she said, no, vegan. And I said, oh, okay. And that's when she stopped the machine.
Did you find that the lifestyle of the show, you know, being a workaholic, as you mentioned, the hours are crazy. Did that influence your lifestyle pre this changeover?
Well, you know, convenience becomes a real thing that you need in your life when you work hard and you work long hours and you're up at strange hours. And so that's a big excuse I hear a lot from people about why they eat the way they eat. And I suppose I was using it at the time, too. I need everything that's wrapped in a package and can stay in my drawer because carried around in my purse because I'm never anywhere and, you know, I can't plan meals. I was a big, you know, promoter of I never know when I'm going to be eating. So how could I take that vitamin before my meal? I don't know when I'm eating. And eventually it took a toll.
And to Ian's point, I mean, there's a lifestyle and then there's a radio lifestyle. I mean, would you have the gorgeous, incredible voice that you have now if you didn't smoke?
You think my voice came from smoking?
I think all good radio voices come from smoking and drinking. Yes, I do.
No, this has always been my voice. So I didn't start smoking until I was 19. So this was my voice before 19. And it really hasn't changed that much over the years. The one thing I did notice was it was getting weaker because of cigarette smoking. And that's when I gave cigarettes up.
And I just want to note that Ian and myself, we don't smoke. So, and never have. So there you go.
And you can hear the difference.
And you can hear the difference. When you went through this and were doing really the entire changeover of this lifestyle, it does impact. I mean, you point this out in the book. It impacts pretty much every aspect of your life in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely. One of the most amazing things was I noticed that I was less irritable and a much happier person, a more even personality. And, you know, I had to say to myself, wow, I didn't even know I was depressed. And I suppose that was there. And once I changed my diet, that depression lifted.
Is that as much fun on the radio then, if you're not as irritable?
Oh, no, it's much more fun because, again, I could choose to have a fight instead of I'm just having a fight.
When you think of the preparation that you have to go through for what it is, now, describe a little bit in the book, you talk at great length, obviously, it's what the book is about, your story and becoming a vegan and becoming a person that has this plant-based diet. There is a lot of preparation as a part of this. There is a lot of commitment on your part. And I'm curious as to, this book was started before you became ill.
Yeah.
As to, was that difficult to maintain throughout your recuperation?
Well, first of all, the book was completed before I even had the diagnosis.
Yeah.
This was a book based on what I had gone through up to that point, and I didn't even know that I was going to face a greater challenge right at the end. But in terms of how do you maintain, well, that's part of a problem that I see in society, you know, especially in medicine. There's very little knowledge about nutrition in the healthcare we dole out to people. You know, we know about medications, we know about treatments, we know about tests. But when it comes to healing, doctors don't heal you. Your body heals itself. You know, the doctor does the operation. But then all he does after he does that operation is put two ends back together and stitch. The body has to know what to do after that. And the body has to have the raw materials to get it done. And, you know, I saw so many times people giving really bad advice to people who are trying to heal from surgery or, you know, get through chemo. You know, they tell them, oh, we just want you to maintain your weight, so eat all the junk food you want. That's not going to help.
So you were able to maintain your diet throughout your recuperation?
I was not able to maintain my diet throughout my recuperation because, quite frankly, I got really angry. when I got sick. That wasn't supposed to happen to me. And at first, it was like, well, heck, this didn't do me any good at all. And, you know, the doctors right after surgery were saying, well, you need to eat, you know, more protein. So I did add fish to my diet for a little while after the surgery. And, you know, but I really do love the way I eat. So I never went, you know, hog wild, if you will. Mm. I just ate a little bit of fish for a while.
So you were back pretty much to the program.
Oh, yeah.
Now.
Because what happened was that, you know, I ran into a couple of problems on the road to recovery, and the doctors had absolutely no answer, except maybe more surgery. And I said, you know what? I'll take care of this myself, because I know what allows a body to heal. And I did. I went right back to all the things I had learned before.
When you think about, as I said before, of all the lessons to come out of this incredible story, one of the really big lessons that you told about on the air when you came back is the importance of a second opinion.
Absolutely. You cannot turn over the decisions about your health to another human being. It's not only the second opinion, it's advising your doctor about what is important to you in your life. When I, you know, first was diagnosed, they were describing this incredible amount of surgery, which could have had several different outcomes. Mm. And I looked at the doctor and I said, some of those outcomes would not be successful surgery to me. And, you know, so people really have to think about that. What is absolutely unacceptable to you in your life? What kind of things in your life are really, really important to you? And you know, and without them, you would not be happy. And so I described to that doctor just who I am as a person. And I want to be that person after this is all over.
Well, for fans of yours, they know you. Maybe it's a version of you, as you've said, from the show. Is the show still one of those most important things to you in your life, having had this life-threatening experience in the last year and a half?
The show is like my right arm. It's such a part of me that, you know, the moment I knew that, you know, like I was going to have this major surgery and it was probably going to keep me out of the studio for a while, the first thing I said was, make sure that ISDN line is working. I started people working on that before I was even completely diagnosed. I was like, you get in there and you make sure that works, because I am a part of that. That's a part of me. And as soon as I can, I'm going to be back to it.
What makes the two of you work still so well? And obviously, there are a lot of characters on the show and other pieces of it. But in the end, it's you and Howard. It's that dynamic that's been going strong for more than 30 years. So from your perspective, what makes it work so well?
At this point, the mechanism is hidden to me because it's so automatic. There was a day during, you know, it was two summers ago, not this past summer, the summer before, I was out at Howard's house, and one of his guests was coming into the area where we were having breakfast, and Howard and I were sitting at the table talking, and the guy said, oh my God, Howard listens to the radio show when he's off the air. How pathetic is that? And then he walked into the room, and it was me and Howard talking. And he was like, oh, my goodness, I thought that was the radio. And it's just how we talk. It's just who we are. And so I can't tell you. I mean, we absolutely love each other. And there was a point at which, you know, things were looking bad, and nobody was going to let us do what we do. And, you know, we sort of looked at each other and we said, we got to make this work because it's the only thing we know how to do. And the other thing we said was, don't ever tell anybody how much we enjoy it, because, you know, we would actually do this for free.
Right.
We'd be doing this anyway.
Was it hard in the beginning to be the sidekick, to be that second person?
No, because I never intended to be a sidekick. I was a news person. And, you know, I recognized him as an incredibly talented person when they played me a tape of his work. And I said, that's going to be a really popular show, and I'll be the news person in that show.
Right.
That'll be good for me. And that's all I thought about. I never knew he was going to talk to me. I never knew this was going to happen.
But in radio, and certainly you understand this, that it takes, I think, a very special individual like yourself to remove that it is the Howard Stern Show. It's not the Howard and Robin Show. It's the Howard Stern Show, and you are an essential part of that program, and a part of that program that he has said, certainly most recently, with your health scare, that he would not do without you. So was that at all something to come to terms with?
Again, no, I wasn't planning on doing this. So there was never any, you know, thought about, hey, we want you to be this guy's sidekick. What do you think about that? This developed over time. In fact, my role on the show is completely an accident because in defiance of NBC regulations, I just stayed in the studio at a certain point. I was like, something's got to give here. This is not working what we're doing. And I'm just going to mutiny here. And I'm going to just sit in the studio all the time.
And
that's how it happened. And all of a sudden, Howard was like, oh, I like this. You know, you need to stay here all the time. And when they tried to pull me out, it was like, no, she needs to be in here. And that's how it happened. So it wasn't like I ever thought I was going to be anything more than a news person on that show.
The show, of course, has always had an edge. And when something like this happens, I mean, you don't expect, when you came into the studio and you were there for the first time just a few days ago, I mean, my wife and I cried on the way to work.
Oh.
I mean, it was a heartwarming, lovely moment.
Seriously, I've been praying for this day, and I'm really happy that you are here, and it makes me very, very happy.
I had a feeling you thought this day would never come.
I really, you know what? Honestly, I did not think this day would come. I did not know. I was very, very depressed over your illness. I wasn't sure what the outcome was going to be. There was a time I really did think I was going to lose you permanently. And I'll tell you what, this is a pretty remarkable day that you are here triumphant and cured. I mean, I never would have predicted this.
Which is something that you don't expect or isn't certainly the norm on that program.
Right. You don't tune in going, I'm going to get another heartwarming.
Well, right. Which is partially why we listen to it. You know, you want to have that. But by the same token, it to me anyway, speaks volumes as to the team that Howard has put together and the strength of the relationship that you two have both on the air and off.
Always viewed the show as an overheard conversation. I said the best conversations are the ones you're hearing when nobody else expects to be listening, you know, when you think you're just talking amongst yourselves. And that's what I always thought of as the definition of the show. So the conversation was always intimate. And the conversation became more intimate as we became really good friends. You know, it was a calculated thing to spend all of our time together when we first started working together so that we would have that kind of intimacy. That it really developed into a friendship is a bonus.
Well, the world is always wondering, but how much longer do you want to do this? And how much longer does Howard want to do this?
We have no idea. Someone said, Ronnie, as a matter of fact, asked me today if while I was sitting at home doing the show from home, did I ever think about just giving it all up and letting it go? And I said, no, not once. I just sat around for 17 months. It was really boring.
And do you think deep down, do you think Howard has the same, I mean, you know him better than practically anybody, that he wouldn't be happy not doing that every morning, would he?
Well, I think he, you know, from time to time comes to terms with what's really going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, in the last year or two, I think he has determined that he needs this outlet. One of the things that I've said to him from time to time when he's considering letting it go, I said, the one thing you don't want to do is to go too soon. Make sure you really could be without it before you give it up. Because sometimes after you let go, you can't come back if you let go too soon. And so, you know, he was just saying the other day, we probably won't know when that right time is to go, and we'll be, you know, these two Alta Cockers on the air, relevant to no one, and simply amusing ourselves.
And you realize the lottery that you've won, that you have been on the air for 30-plus years and continue to be relevant. And not only that, but with AGT and with Sirius, that relevancy only increases.
Well, yeah, and this is a real blessing. You know, I sit around sometimes and think about how many things we've seen come and go as we've continued our career. And to think that we're the constant, that these things come in and go out of fashion and we're still here, is amazing.
Well, I certainly, as I said to you from the beginning, you are one of my true heroes in this profession. I think you are just an amazing woman and an amazing talent on the air, and have meant so much to me and so much to my career. And I can't even begin to tell you what an honor it has been to speak to you this morning.
Well, thank you. I've been told that by a number of people over the course of this last week when I've been doing interviews, people, especially people in radio, and that's such a wonderful thing to hear.
And I just want to add that it's nice to have you in our headphones, if only briefly. I can see how someone could get used to that.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
The name of the book is The Vegetation of Robin, How Real Food Saved My Life. It is published by Avery. Robin Quivers, an absolute delight.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure talking to you.
The name again of the book is The Vegetation of Robin, How Real Food Saved My Life. It is published by Avery.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.